This is no substitute for you. Though I've loved, it is no use. I must admit that this is out of my control. There's nowhere to fill this hole, 'cause now I finally know. This is no substitute.
Welcome to Music Buddy. My name is Jane Gowan, and that song is called No Substitute by the band To The Fields from their 2021 album, Distance. My guest today is Seth Akira Feldman, who's the creative force and musical talent behind To The Fields. He also happens to be personally related to me in that he's my beautiful stepdaughter Roz's number one fella, her main man, so to speak. So that means I've had lots of opportunities during family visits, etc., to talk to him about music. And we've even done a little jamming here and there. Question though, can you call someone a son-in-law, even though there hasn't been an official wedding? I'm no genealogist, but I'm going to go with yes. Anyhow, Seth's a really good guy and works hard at his craft. He's a mostly self-taught, independent musician who luckily has a decent day job to support his musical habits. I'm glad to finally get him on the podcast so I could pepper him with questions. But before we get into the conversation, I'd like to give a big thank you to recent donors, David and Ann Peters, who also happen to be the best neighbors in the world. I'm not just saying that because they donated. They really are the best. If, like David and Ann, you enjoy the podcast and are in a position to make a contribution, it really helps us out. To donate, you can go to musicbuddy.ca/donate or look for the link on our various social media accounts. We're at Music Buddy Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and we're also on TikTok. If you're not in a position to donate, totally understandable, but if you still want to help out, please spread the word on social media or comment and rate on the show's page on your podcast platform. Thanks so much. And thank you for being here. Now, here's my conversation with Seth Feldman.
It's all feeling. It's all love. It's all connections that human. So tell me where you're coming from,
where you're coming from.
'Cause I got time and the night is young.
Seth Feldman, welcome to Music Buddy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm a longtime listener, first time guest.
Nice. I love it. Well, thank you for being a listener.
Thank you.
We should put it in context, tell people where we are today. We're at Music Buddy headquarters in East Toronto.
Yes. We won't disclose the exact location for the safety of those involved.
And we're in the kitchen, which is also nice. This is the first time we've done this here. It's kind of nice. We've got tea. We had snacks. You've been here many times because you are... I mean, how would you describe... How are we related? We're related. We're kind of family because you're my stepdaughter. Well, my daughter. You're Roz's partner, guy.
Yeah, I think that's
main squeeze.
A good summary. I like the term partner. In the past, I've used girlfriend, but it seems like kind of juvenile, not fully encompassing of what it is, right?
Yeah,
so,
'cause she's a woman.
She's a woman.
Yeah.
And more than a friend.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of a funny term, girlfriend, isn't it?
She's a woman person of interest.
She is a person of interest in both our lives. Yay, Roz. Shout out to Roz Diebert.
She's great.
She is great. You guys are a great couple.
So, but you know, once I got to sort of know you a little bit, I realized you're a musician and you're super into music and you play music and you write music and you're singer-songwriter and you love singing. And so I thought, well, that's cool. And so we should talk more about that. And we've done some jamming together and stuff, but we, and we've had lots of conversations about music actually. So it's finally good to get it down on tape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something good might come out of it.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll know in 45 to 50 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if no one ever hears this, then I guess it didn't turn out well.
And at the end, what we're doing today is doing this part of the interview here in the kitchen. And then in a couple of days, we're going to go to the woodshed and do your Music Buddy session where we're going to play one of your original songs. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. I'm very excited.
I am too. So you have a band, or I guess it's a musical project mostly, you would call it, called To the Fields.
Yes.
And you put out one album, 2021, called Distance.
That sounds right.
Yeah. I checked. And I listened to that album, and I actually was lucky enough to hear some of the tracks on it before you put it out.
Yeah, you were in my my demographic testing group.
Yeah, that was an honor.
It was helpful. Because at the time I was like, because I was doing everything myself, I was really struggling with perspective and the balance of making it good and just banging my head against the wall for hours at end.
Right.
You know that artistic process.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was helpful to get some feedback.
Well, I thought it was really bold of you to do that, because I think it... I think that's in a way almost harder than putting it out there and worrying about, you know, and letting the public decide. Getting people, you know, to listen to your music and offer honest feedback is pretty, I think that's pretty difficult. I thought it was brave of you. Did you like the feedback you got? Like, was it helpful?
Yeah, I think I sent you a survey to fill out.
Yeah.
So then I took the data from there to, it helped inform some decisions that I made after. I also was sharing with, like, I'm fortunate to know, like, numerous musicians and audio engineers and stuff like that. So I was able to bounce it off the ears of many different people. And it just helped a lot. It's just, I mean, this is obvious, but I said earlier that I did it on my own, but you can't really do it 100% on your own, right?
Yeah. It's true. Other humans need to be involved.
Yeah, because it's for other humans.
Music is for others.
Ideally.
Yeah. Do you do mostly music because you want to play it for people, right? I mean...
Yeah. I don't know. It's most of my songwriting is, it sort of comes out of a necessity. It's like there's certain feelings that I just need to put into some sort of material form. But there's like a, there's an aspect of sharing it that this like really brings it home. And it's amazing how songs, like the meaning to the writer is not necessarily the meaning that is received by the listener. I mean, if you think of like any song, like if you ask five people, I'm sure they'll give you five different answers as to like what each line means. And that's really interesting.
When you're writing the songs, do you think carefully? I mean, I know you to be a fairly, how would I describe you, Seth? Awesome guy. But like you're fairly, I don't know if the word's methodical, but you want things to be right and you want them to sound good. And you want, so when you're writing, I guess just with lyrics, when you're writing your lyrics, are you thinking how they're going to be interpreted, or are you just putting them down the page and going, this is how I feel?
Well, yeah, I think that's a fair description of me, first of all.
I know there's better words, but anyhow, yeah.
Measured, maybe?
Yeah, it's measured. I'm not saying
neurotic.
You're not robotic. You're just, I wouldn't call you neurotic either, but yeah, you're careful about.
Yeah, I'm robot adjacent. Well, yeah, I'm pretty particular about lyrics, especially. I'm very much not stream of consciousness. I go based on like a theme or feeling, and then find ways to elaborate on it. And I will often just be rewriting things up until the moment it's recorded or after that too.
Mm. Do you like, have, oh no, go ahead.
Well, there's one example on the album, the last song, where I changed the chorus. Like, well, first of all, that song I had written like 10 years earlier or something. It was like a really old song.
In the Morning, a beautiful song.
Oh, well, thank you. It was like 10 years old, at least at the time I was working on it for mm-hmm. this album. And I rewrote the chorus like somewhere in the writing process mm-hmm. just to make it like less repetitive. But that's just an example of like the writing process was not done, even though it was an extremely old song. So I'm slow in that regard.
So you're not the kind of guy who would just like, oh, write, scratch down something while you're sitting on the John or something.
No.
And have it done.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not like a Bob Dylan where I just like sit at a typewriter and clack it out and then that's the song. I go over it and like I want things to make sort of logical sense, which is maybe not the best way to approach art. But it's the way that like gels well with my mind.
Yeah, and that's what makes you happy, right? As an artist, it makes you feel good. Mm-hmm.
Don't say that this is the end. Something's tugging on my head. Don't say that this is the end. Don't go and leave me again. If I only knew how to turn back the clock.
So you recorded this one. Even though you said there were other humans involved, you did record this one alone in your apartment that you live in with Roz.
well, it wasn't that
apartment. Maybe three apartments, different. Didn't you move during the recording process?
It was definitely like inter-apartmental. I think it was before, all the recording would have been done prior to Roz and I moving in together.
Okay.
But then the mixing, mastering stuff happened while we were living together.
Right. And a lot of that was also during the pandemic, right?
That's right. Yeah. That
the
helped me like
time.
Focus in, actually put the hours that it required in and then some probably.
Yeah. So you found the pandemic to be beneficial to your artistic life.
In
some ways.
At that time, for sure.
Yeah.
I was working on it in the morning before I would start my work shift because I was working from home. So yeah, that was really beneficial to not have to have the commute in, and I could like be messing around with it up to the minute I signed in, which was pretty nice.
So when you sign into work, okay, so you have a day job.
Yes.
a pretty good, decent day job at U of T, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so when you, I'm interested because I think it's very hard to stop doing something artistic and then just start something else. So did you actually have to sign in at a certain time?
I tend to start around like 9:30. Before or after is fine. Mm. It's not a big deal. But I guess what I was doing was more because I wasn't really recording. The creative part, like mixing is creative for sure, but it's just a little different than like, say, coming up with the guitar parts. That's like a highly creative thing where I agree, like having to break the flow of it would be really disruptive. But for what I was doing, it like didn't seem to be too bad. But it also took me a really long time to do it. So maybe it was.
Right. Yeah. Well, it turned out great and it's beautiful. But with regards to your day job, I mean, you have a decent job that you like, right?
Yeah. It's good. Feeds the cats.
Feeds your two cats, two lovely cats. But if you had your druthers, would you prefer to be a full-time musician / artist?
It's a good question. I don't know. So I guess there's two versions of that, right? Like, I could be a musician that just did my own stuff, and it was like I made a livelihood mm-hmm. of being a quote-unquote artist, right? But then there's the other side of, like, I can make a living doing stuff in the field, which I think is a more realistic path. I think it'd be really fun to produce other people, but also, like, performing, like, live for, like, say, doing cover songs.
Right.
That's something I've, like, been thinking about doing. Like,
do you have, like, a cover band that you play in?
Sort of. It's very intermittent.
Okay.
Like, we'll go on years of hiatus because the only organized person involved, like, lives in Australia. And
oh,
so
that's quite a time difference.
There's the time difference, but also the...
it's hard to get together
the
for rehearsals.
The commute time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems like that only comes together when he comes to town. But I think I just need to get my stuff together and organize it. And
yeah. Get out there.
Yeah. And it's fun. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who do you play when you play cover songs? Who are your main go-tos?
We were doing, like, sort of 90s music.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the 90s.
Then, well, yeah, you've heard of them, recall them, probably.
I do.
I do, too, vaguely. for different reasons, we probably have. yeah.
Yeah.
You
were born in the early 90s, mid-90s? When were you born?
90.
Oh, you were born 90.
So I was there for almost all of it, a 90s child. Yeah. Yeah, but the band was doing, like, a mix of 90s music and also, like, TV theme songs.
Oh, fun.
Which is a little unusual, but fun. Like, the King of the Hill theme, which is actually, like, a great guitar riff. I don't know if you can picture it, but...
I can't.
You can sprinkle it in, maybe, in the...
Yeah, I'll try to sprinkle some of that in. Right about here.
Yahoos and Triangles by The Refreshments, also known as the King of the Hill theme song. For the series King of the Hill, created by Mike Judge. And speaking of Mike Judge, if you haven't seen his series Tales from the Tour Bus, highly recommend. It's hilarious, brilliant, fantastic animation, and you'll also learn a lot about music history. So yeah, go check that out wherever you can. Okay, back to the conversation with Seth.
You know, you do have also other bandmates, right? That you,
yeah.
I mean, you've got your cover band guys, and are they some of the same guys that you'd play with if you were doing original music too?
Probably. I've been wanting to find, like, a good drummer to. Which is a hard.
It's always.
They're hard to come by. They're high
busy.
Demand, and they're.
Yeah. And drummers, they're it's like a goal. They're like goalies. As a hockey guy, you would understand.
No,
I
appreciate that totally. Yeah, the drummer is, I would say, the goalie of the band.
For sure. Yeah, so you've got your original band guys, and who are these fellas? I think I've met some of them. Maybe some guy, a guy named Sam.
So Sam's probably the longest musical collaborator that I have. I met him in high school, which was a decade ago, at least. I just found him in the auditorium, I think.
Nice.
Playing piano. Something like that.
Your force fields drew to each other.
Yeah.
We
gelled well on a personal level, and he's got, like, this amazing musical training background. He did, like, all the Royal Conservatory stuff, or almost all of it. I think he might have checked out the last year or whatever, but...
Fair enough.
He got some serious ear training out of it, and he's, like, the kind of guy who can, like, you don't have to tell him anything. He just can play along or generate the song out of his mind. He just can. Wow. He's got like a one-to-one, what he hears in his head, he can translate to the keyboard, which is
amazing.
That's what I strive to achieve.
Don't we all? Yeah. So he's what would you call him? He'd be, he's your secret weapon.
Yeah. My magic mic.
That's not magic right. Sam. Yeah. Your secret weapon.
Yeah. He's great. Yeah. He's a great guy as well.
So you guys are going to be playing together for a while then?
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. Speaking of someone like Sam and what you were saying earlier in terms of doing stuff in the business is not necessarily playing music live or whatever, would something like doing film composition or something, you know, if you and Sam maybe were to team up as a, you know?
Yeah, that's a great idea. I really like the idea of writing scores. Mm-hmm. I had actually a brief sort of experience doing that with, like, Sam's parents were working on a film. It never turned into a full feature because they were basically trying to get funding for it. But yeah, there's a song that I wrote for it. And then like a score version of that song materialized through me, like, basically taking a keyboard part that Sam had played and then like rejigging it in Logic to make it have all the like good, musical scorey type stuff, like horns and things. It's pretty neat what you can do. But yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I would like actually love to do that kind of thing. Musical scores they're so cool because like often they're so based on motifs and that repetition theme. And it's often just like a simple melody line that gets reused and referenced in different ways. And it's like, it's just a really interesting musical form that I quite like.
So, someone like Philip Glass or Steve Reich, they do stuff that's very repetitive, but so beautiful. You know, if you listen to any of their scores or music, those two are masters of that, I would say.
I can't think of any of their stuff at the moment, but you'll show me after, I'm sure.
I'll show you after.
Okay.
Okay, I want to share quickly a small sampling of one of my favorite soundtracks. This is for Seth. This was composed by the great Philip Glass for the Errol Morris documentary Fog of War. This movement is called Dominoes.
Do you have formal music training or did you study in high? How did you get started playing and what was your training like coming up?
I don't have a lot of training. Mm-hmm. I did like take piano lessons from, I think, age 9 to 11. How much of that I really remember is, I don't know. I know all the keys on the keyboard, which I assume I learned then because I don't remember learning it otherwise.
Right.
It was like very basic, like, you know, like Mary Had a Little Lamb stuff like that. Yankee Doodle.
Classics.
Yeah.
Did you study in high school?
In high school, I was doing drama. I did do some musical theater, so that's crossover.
And this was at Rosedale High, right? In Toronto?
Yeah, the arts school.
Yeah, where Roz also went.
Yes, but we're a different generation.
Oh,
so we didn't overlap, I don't think, or only briefly. We are 5 years apart.
Oh, 5 years.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, you wouldn't really have known each other so much in the halls.
No.
You wouldn't have passed each other in the halls a lot.
No, I think she saw me in like Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, you were in Fiddler on the Roof, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was the roof.
Where's our drummer when we need it?
They're hard to find.
Yeah, what was your role in Fiddler on the Roof?
I was in the chorus, like, as a general Jewish man. But then I was also...
A general Jew.
Yeah. not like a general.
No.
But like one who is...
Not a military Jewish
yeah.
man.
But then I was actually a military Russian man.
Oh.
In addition, when I wasn't wearing the big beard, I was playing a Russian guy who become he's like the love interest of one of the daughters. I had one line.
Did you have to sing that line?
No, I just said it.
How'd
and
that
I
go?
Wasn't, and I don't think I was allowed to use a Russian accent either.
I can imagine.
Yeah. The line was vodka.
That's it?
Yeah.
Beautiful. You sang in the chorus in that play.
Yeah.
And by that time, had you already been, I mean, I know that you taught yourself to sing a lot of, I know that about you already, but had you already started practicing singing when you were doing that?
Well, the interest was there. Yeah. Before that time, I had been writing songs and like trying to sing them, but the dots hadn't really connected.
Mm.
I think I just didn't really understand like what singing was. I think I didn't understand like how melody fits into the context of music.
I remember feeling that what that felt like.
Okay, well, good. It wasn't just me.
I remember not knowing what harmony was.
Oh yeah, harmony is another thing.
Yeah,
yeah. That's tricky.
But you had sung like your father, Stephen Allen Feldman. He's also a musician.
Yeah, he's right? a songwriter, singer. Mm-hmm. He's quite a good singer without any kind of formal training.
Yeah, his songs are beautiful. They're also available on Spotify, but you do have to look for his full three names, Stephen Allen Feldman, because there's some other Steve Feldman up there.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of competition, I guess, in that space.
So growing up with your dad, did you guys ever, did you play songs together when you were younger?
Not really. I learned guitar like later in life. Mm-hmm. Not that late. I started when I was like 15. I remember there's like one collaboration we did recording wise, like when I was a child of like some song that I guess we probably co-wrote together, but it was like a joke. It was someone's honking at me, which I guess was the tale of someone honking at probably not me because I was a child. So
hopefully not. Sounds like a catchy song.
It could have been a hit,
got to get that up on the streaming services.
Yeah.
But the project you did with your dad, I mean, you guys made a whole album together called Timeless.
It's Timeless.
Oh, sorry.
That's
the album
right.
is called It's Timeless.
Yeah. Timeless was on the short list of names for the album, though.
But It's Timeless is also the name of there's a song called It's Timeless, which is gorgeous.
Oh, well, thank you.
And you guys recorded that. It was sort of a father-son project with Vasey Tayeb at Kensington Sound?
Yes.
Is that
I think it's Tayeb.
Vasey Tayeb.
But he also just tends to go by Vasey.
Vasey. And he's a musician and also runs Kensington Sound.
Yeah. He's an excellent producer / engineer. He's also like the musical director and guitar player in the current iteration of the Drifters. He was just on tour with them in Ireland.
Amazing.
Which is pretty neat. He's a great producer. He has like the perfect kind of temperament for working with my dad. For a producer, you need someone who makes you feel comfortable and like free enough to get what you have inside out.
Is it fair to say, and we can take this out, but is it fair to say that your dad has some challenges sometimes when it comes to just being?
Yeah, I mean, don't we are all?
But, we do all.
Time does heal in the subtlest ways it's revealed, and our love is real. We both know that this is love that we feel. It's timeless, my love for you. It's timeless, you feel it too. In silence, this feeling grew. It's timeless, my love for you. It's timeless, my love for you.
think there's like very few producers who would be able to like work with him effectively.
Uh-huh. But they've known each other a long time, Basie and your dad.
Yeah, they first did an album together in 2003. So that was just the two of them. That would have been before I even like had picked up a guitar. That album was called Living in a Picture Show, and it was released with a companion poetry book.
Oh, very nice.
Called In the Shallow Noise.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I should get you a copy of these things.
Yeah, are these?
I probably have like 10 of them at
okay,
home.
Okay, yeah, please do. There's also a book about Kensington Sound, right? That's available called On the Record, The Story of Kensington Sound and Other Musical Adventures. Available in a variety of places, but you were just saying if you get it from Amazon, not such a good idea?
That was the last I heard. I'm not sure what the current verdict is on that, but it's an interesting book if you are able to find it.
Yeah.
That it's in the short story format.
Mm-hmm.
So like 1 to 3 pagers about various adventures in Basie, the producer we're talking about, life. There's a story about Joni Mitchell in there, Cat Stevens, Daniel Lanois, and others. It's a good read. It's like, it's nice because it's like, because each story is standalone. I found it was a very good, like, before bed read.
Kensington Sound's been open since the 70s or something, and they've recorded so many people like Teenage Head, Ron Sexsmith, David Wilcox, Alana Miles.
Yeah, Alana Miles was their biggest. They have the diamond record.
Oh, amazing.
On the wall, and yeah, it's pretty cool. They just celebrated their 50th a couple of years ago. So to be in business in Toronto, to be in the music business for that long, is not easy to do.
It's pretty significant.
Yeah. If you're a musician, I would definitely recommend checking them out.
Heading down there?
Yeah.
Do you think you and your dad will do another record again sometime?
Funny you should ask.
Oh, yeah?
We're finishing up another one, actually.
Oh, really? Like,
it's been a slow burn. We're just doing some final stuff, like cleaning it up a bit for the final master, and then it is out the door.
Well, that's great news to hear from Seth that he and his dad are working on a new album. And lucky for me, Seth was able to share a couple of tracks from that album. Here's a sample of one called Open Road.
In terms of singers, who are some of the people, like we were just talking about you, you know, teaching yourself how to sing. And when you were doing that, I don't know how long you spent. I mean, I guess everybody's in the process of, anybody who sings is always trying to learn how to sing better, right?
I'm not finished.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you've got a beautiful voice. I mean, it reminds me sometimes of Jeff Buckley voice, or it could be like a Harry Nilsson type voice. Like it seems to... Or it could evoke some, you know, some of the classic soul singers and things like that. So I'm just wondering, who are your vocal inspirations? Like if you could wake up and sound like somebody tomorrow.
Right. Yeah. well, actually, you're pretty close. Like Jeff Buckley was a huge inspiration and someone I spent a lot of time trying to emulate. Also, Dallas Green from City in Color, who I think did the same thing. He learned to sing by imitating Jeff Buckley.
Did he really?
And then I learned from both of them. Yeah, this is, I happened upon an interview with Dallas where he was talking about that, and I thought it was just so neat because like this was after I had already done that with both of them. And also indicated to me that I was like on a good path.
And it's great how inspiration gets passed down and passed around, right? And then becomes its own thing. Now you've turned it into your own style.
Yeah. I think like for voices, I'm attracted to, there's a common thread amongst the voices that I'm attracted to.
Uh-huh.
They tend to have this like floaty, clear tone, which, like, another huge influence, Sam Cooke, who just has, like, one of the butteriest, beautiful voices ever. He also had this, like, grit. He could get this great grit in the live performances. So, yeah, there's definitely a soul influence. Marvin Gaye, mm-hmm. another great example. Mm. Basically, like, these are singers that are able to go from... They travel very fluidly from, like, the head voice, upper ranges, into, like, their middle voice. And there's, like, the singers that, like, can do it really seamlessly. Like, those are the things I'm attracted to. In the rock genre, Brad Delp from the band Boston.
Oh, wow.
From, nice. You know, like, More Than a Feeling.
Yeah. Oh, do I?
Yeah. that's one of my favorite voices ever. So, like, I... learned a lot from trying to copy him. But there's this common airiness, floaty thing that is amongst all of these voices I like. In terms of, like, female vocalists, like Eva Cassidy, she has the same thing, but it's just in a sort of different range. It's just up a bit. Mm-hmm.
Do you have vocal exercises that you do?
I did. Mm-hmm. I don't really anymore. There one exercise that I think helped dial it in. It's from the Italian opera technique school of bel canto. Canto? I don't know.
Sure.
Someone either. Can correct me if they want.
I say canto, you say canto.
But let's call the whole thing off. There's this exercise, it's called messa di voce, which is Italian for placing the voice. And essentially, it's the ability to do what I was describing the singers do. They going from, like, diminuendo to crescendo. Does that sound right? You have more musical background than I do.
Well, you could go from pianissimo to...
Oh, that sounds better.
Forte?
Yeah. Yeah.
And using a crescendo?
So yeah, right. Crescendo is like the act of... getting louder. Yeah. Should I give an example?
You should. I think that would be excellent.
So, like, say... I have no... There's no warm-up involved here.
Okay, just so you know, Seth has not warmed up for this.
Yeah. So the idea is... You take a note and you go from a small sound to a big sound. Mm-hmm. So, like, hopefully the mic doesn't clip. I'll sit back a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
If I do, like, a... So that's soft, right?
Wow, was that you?
No. That was amazing. That was... I called that in. I don't... Hopefully that's not too high.
Wow.
So the idea...
Definitely clipped.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
No, that's really cool.
Destructive.
Tell me what the idea is.
Well, okay. The idea is, like, to build the coordination in your vocal cords so that you can go from that small sound to the big sound.
The core what in your vocal cords?
The coordination.
Oh, the coordination.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Because it's like singing is, like, less like weightlifting than it is flexibility. You don't want to have to do your loud singing by screaming. I mean, there's a lot of great screaming singing.
There is, but...
Yeah, but you don't want to be, like, your only option. But, I mean, I also love that kind of vocalization. We were talking about favorite singers, Chris Cornell, Soundgarden, Audioslave, Temple of the Dog. I love all that stuff. Uh-huh. And he's got this great, like, these upper screams that I can kind of do. It's very exhilarating to hear and also... do.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about primal scream therapy before the mic got turned on.
Yeah.
And there must be something in that, like in the way that the therapy part of it is that you're screaming, and it's mm-hmm. to allow yourself to do that kind of vocalization. You have to really kind of let it all go, don't you?
Yeah. It's it's primal, but it's human. And I think that's why people connect to it, because uh-huh. it can convey a lot of emotion that words can't. Yeah, so before this we were talking about John Lennon, Mother, the end of that song, like there's just so much agony. It's just so heart-wrenching. Mm-hmm. And it's like part of it's because of the words, knowledge of his life. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it is just because you can feel the rawness and the authenticity mm-hmm. of I'm feeling kind of emotional just describing the song. It's just so real.
This is kind of an ongoing process for you to kind of become as dynamic a singer as you can possibly be, right?
Yeah, that's, I think the important thing is like, is building up your internal ear and the connection, I call it the mind-voice connection, of taking what you can hear in your mind and making it come out of your mouth.
Thousand miles away, and I still got you on my mind. Every night, wish I could separate what my heart wants and what I know is right. It's a daily fight. I know these things, they can take time, but I can't leave these thoughts behind. And as I walk these streets with these names I cannot read.
Simultaneously with your dad's album, are you working on anything, some new stuff yourself?
Not really. I'm kind of on hiatus from the creative music side of things. I still play guitar like a lot, and I try to learn by ear as much as possible. So like trying to do that stuff, like just a lot of like classic rock guitar riff kind of things, you know?
And do you have a lot of guitars? Like you sort of collect them, don't you? Would you say
I guess so.
I've seen your studio and there are a lot of guitars hanging on the wall.
Yeah, I have the affliction of the, there's that rule of guitar players, like the amount of guitars that one needs is N plus one. So N represents the number of guitars currently possessed, and plus one is all, there's always one more.
Right. But, so you just got to stay away from the guitar stops, I guess, or from Facebook marketplace.
It's hard. I've been pretty good. I sold two, bought one.
There you go.
Which was a pretty good balance, I think.
What's one of your favorite guitars?
Well, my first electric was a Stratocaster, and so I'm still partial to the feel of them. I've also installed like an aftermarket tremolo bar, which is really nice. It stays in tune very well. The original system is like not great for that. They tend to be very temperamental. But this one I can like be pretty aggressive with it, and like it goes back to pitch.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's a bit more expressive also. So you can do those like wavy things, like the kind of like Jeff Beck isms that he was known for doing, but also can get away with doing some kind of Van Halen-esque dive bombs and Hendrix stuff. Yeah, the tremolo system is called, it's by the company Super V. What is it called? The something Blade Runner. Yeah.
Oh, that's my favorite movie.
Really? That's a great movie.
One of them. Top five.
Yeah, I think at the time that it played a little bit into purchasing, because it had a cool name. Maybe we can get a sponsor.
I'd love to be sponsored by Blade Runner.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
That would
cool.
be amazing.
Yeah.
Where do you listen to your music mostly? What platform?
These days it's mainly Spotify, just because of the convenience of it. I mean, I used to buy all the CDs and collect them, and but that's cumbersome and expensive. And
lots of plastic.
Lots of plastic, and it's just, you just can't compare to a streaming service, right, in terms of convenience.
But as someone who's, I know to be quite an audiophile, as you are, and also someone who's just, you know, you're starting to build your audience for your own music. Do you bemoan the fact that you can't, that, you know, the analog is harder and more expensive to put out and most people are doing streaming, or are you happy with streaming?
the technology, like, it allows a lot of things that couldn't be done before, like the rapid release of music, for instance, right? Like, you don't have to go to, like, a place to have it all printed, and the album art doesn't really need to be, you don't need, a full booklet. You can just have a cover.
That's right.
And that's all, right? So it's like, it's really easy to produce stuff for those platforms. And then a consequence is, like, there's a lot of sort of fast fashion, fast food music that gets created. So I think that side of it is bad. I don't like stuff that's created for very short-term gain. I'm very old school. I like full albums. I think you were speaking about that in a recent podcast episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I was talking about that with Julian Taylor and Ansley Simpson. Oh,
yeah.
Because right. They both put out albums that you benefit, I think, if you listen to them all the way through
right. In
a single sitting. And I actually experienced that with both those albums. I really enjoyed listening to them all the way through, and it was refreshing because I hadn't done that in so long.
Right. And they were both sort of like concept albums, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Especially with Ansley's.
I mean, that's obviously something with a format you can only do with the album, right? Would the Who have released Tommy today?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Probably not.
Let's get Pete Townsend on the phone.
Yeah, that's his opinion.
Well, and speaking of Pete Townsend of The Who, he has had known struggles with hearing loss and tinnitus for many years now. And so Seth and I morphed our conversation into talking about taking care of your ears.
Well, we can talk about hearing protection.
Yeah. Well, my friend Lisa Sabino, a previous Music Buddy guest, just gave me some amazing earplugs last night.
Right. D-Buds, is that?
D-Buds.
D-Buds.
You're good.
Yeah, I read the box.
Available at Long & McQuaid.
Nice.
Yeah.
I have eargasms.
Eargasms.
Personally. So.
Excuse moi.
Yeah.
Wow. And so are they ear protection?
Yeah. They're just, they're the best earplugs I've found so far that preserve the quality of sound, especially like playing music with people. Like, if you can't hear what you're playing or they're playing, it's like horrible.
Yeah.
Right? But these ones, I like actually can, it just attenuates the sound without losing high or low frequencies, really.
Nice.
Yeah. They actually come with two different sizes.
Mm-hmm.
So like if the silicone doesn't fit your ear properly, then chances are the other size will. So that's that's nice. But
according to the D-Buds, I have very large ear holes because I had to choose the largest size.
Well, don't take it personally.
I'm trying not to.
It probably makes you a better musician.
What's the next live show you're going to go to or play? Speaking of hearing protection.
Oh, Unknown.
Unknown. I love that band.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite venue in Toronto?
Well, for local bands, I mean, there's like the Horseshoe.
Mm-hmm.
Which I know has been mentioned on the podcast numerous times. It's a great venue.
And it will be still.
And it will be. Yeah. If they want to sponsor the podcast, they're welcome to.
Totally welcome.
But in terms of like memories, I think, I don't know what it's called now, but whatever used to be the Budweiser or the Molson Amphitheater.
Was it the outdoor stage?
Is it the Budweiser something now?
Could be.
Some beer stage.
A beer stage.
By the CNA.
At Ontario Place?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember seeing Soundgarden there. Soundgarden with Chris Cornell before he passed away, obviously. Mm-hmm. During the concert, we were outside because of the venue.
Mm-hmm.
And it started to thunderstorm, which for the kind of music, it's like, is very cool. But it's also the timing, it lined up with when they were playing Black Hole Sun, which is a very weathery song.
Yeah,
let's say.
A great song.
And a great song. So it was just like a very magical moment that could only happen in an outdoor place.
Wow.
So
that's cool. So what did everybody do? Did you put plastic bags on or what happened?
We just experienced the world as it was.
Amazing. You let yourself be absorbed by the elements.
Yes. Well, and we absorb the elements.
That's fantastic.
Black hole stone, don't you come?
it looks like some people just came home to Music Buddy headquarters. So I think we might have like some guest questions. Would that be okay with you, Seth?
Sure.
From people you know quite well.
Yes.
Let me just see. Let's just see. I think there's someone over there who wants to ask something. Hang on. Funny, it turns out actually it's just someone who's calling in, Seth. It's weird, even though...
Yeah, I didn't know we had that technology available.
I didn't even know we had a landline anymore, but we do, so...
Hey, Seth!
Hello, caller.
Happy to be on the show, Music Buddy, big fan. And big fan of your music, Seth.
I just wanted
to ask, to the fields, which fields specifically are you referring to in the name of your musical nom de plume?
Good question. Thank you, caller Michael.
That was Michael.
That was Michael. I just spoiled it. all the fields, just everyone available.
Wow. Okay. Thanks.
And why to the fields and not in the fields?
Oh, good question. I didn't think of in the fields.
Okay.
I just like the look and sound of to the fields. It's sort of a play on my last name.
Oh,
because I'm a Feldman, which is a man in a field. Yeah.
Can I make a request then?
Sure.
For your next album, can you call it In the Fields by the artist To the Fields?
Yeah. From the fields to the fields in the fields. The visual aspect of a field is just like really peaceful to me. And
it is.
I like that.
Well, I look forward to more music from To the Fields, and it's been great to sort of be part of your process and get to know you as a musician. And I'm really looking forward to playing your new song. So thank you for writing one for the occasion.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for giving me a reason to do something.
And say hello to your cats, Charlie and Luna.
All right.
For me.
Okay. I will, for sure.
Thank you, Seth.
Thank you.
Okay, fast forward a couple of days, and we headed over to the Woodshed Studio and recorded Seth's beautiful new song, Morning Sky. So you'll hear him on vocals and guitar, and me on some keys and some background vocals, and Tim Vesley on bass and guitar. And as always, Tim recorded, mixed, and mastered the song. Here's Morning Sky by Seth Akira Feldman, a.k.a. To the Fields.
Sweet, sweet song, though they're all
and the splash nearby reminds me to live under this morning sky.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Music Buddy is brought to you by Morning Run Productions, committed to keeping your ears happy and healthy. If you'd like to email me, I'm jane@musicbuddy.ca. If you need any information, if you have any questions or feedback, I'd love to hear from you. Feel free also to reach out via social media, and please rate and share the show and comment and all that good stuff wherever you can, and it really helps us out a lot. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Until then, enjoy those morning skies. Maybe even head to the closest field and just look up at that sky for a long time. Take care, everyone.